Columbia Network welcomes you to the Columbia Workshop. Tomorrow is the 150th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. The President of the United States has asked that American citizens take special note of this occasion. The Columbia Workshop now presents Citizen for Tomorrow, written specially for this observance by the Pulitzer Prize dramatist Paul Green.
This is an American citizen speaking, one of 135 million, saying his say, wanting to tell what is in his heart, speaking his free and open mind. Even while the bugle blows, from Mexico to Maine, the bugle sounds, from Oregon to Florida, from Texas up to Michigan, calling on America to rise in defense of her freedom and the cause of free men everywhere. And on this December 15th, the President of the United States has ordered that we search our hearts, consider, remember once again these democratic principles, this freedom we have won, and by which our nation lives. For many among us are troubled. What is the way forward in this dark, fateful hour? Yes, what is the meaning of these very rights we are asked to defend? Are they worth dying for?
What are these rights?
We all know them, should know them. Tell him, you in the East,
freedom to worship God.
And you from the South,
freedom of speech.
The Middle West,
freedom of the press.
The Southwest,
freedom of assembly.
From the Northwest,
due process of law, trial by jury.
Yes, and more. All those rights that go with being free men.
Free men. Words, words.
There speaks the opposition, even in time of war.
Yes, and I'll keep on speaking.
That is your right. And some agree with him, many. Even the doubting poets declare their pessimism still. Intoning?
Yes, wandering in darkness, the swaddling of sorrow, defeated and wearied, and no more returning, the heaving and breaking of worlds, and the nation's despairing, the hoarse-throated syllables trumpeted onward, the echoes of doom eternally rolling, re-rolling through the enclosing and vast vaulted ages. Vast, vast, dark, dark, the way of hopeless, tragic man. Who dies for this is but a fool that dies in vain.
But another poet sings a different song. My song.
But chant the refrain, the song never ending, the ever unyielding and ever continuing the battle. Tireless and ageless the heartbeat, the footbeat, the chains fall forgotten, the manacles falling. Oh, say they are falling, the freed arms uplifting. Matchless and stalwart, the warrior unconquerable. Giving and taking the blows and buffetings, the substance and shock of evil encounters. Up, up, on, on.
Yes, on, on. Taking the blows and the buffetings. Up, up towards that new day shining brighter tomorrow. I believe that. I stand on that. And let the bugle blow, for it must blow. Let the guns thunder, for they must thunder. Let the brains be broken and the heartstrings be torn, for so it must be. But hope for the world and its tomorrow must not perish, will not perish. Men will die to save it. Men shall live to keep it.
Even as he talks, the young men drop in death. And now their dreaming and their purpose all are lost. The head of agony upon the pillow turned for naught. Oh, fading footsteps lost forever. Oh, eloquent lips and passionate hearts and gesturing final hands. For these are now as if they'd never been. The waste and pity of it. The
pity and the waste.
The pity and the horror of it.
But still I hold to my belief. I keep my faith with him who sings,
yea, cry out the roll call of their prideful names. Wake with the reveille of our buoyant song those that lie in silence and forgone. Now all our walking is the paths they trod, our speech their same-shaped mouth and tuneful tongue, our gestures still the same strong-fingered hands, plucking the bouquets, firing the guns, building and shaping and creating in their stead. So thus the dead will live in us again, and we the living honorably may die.
The doubting poet still laments.
The scythe drops down. The hammer nerveless drops. The plow and the shovel wait unused and still. The weeds take them. The roots thread their sightless sockets through. The handle shaped to human hands dissolves in dust. And the fierce and clamorous strength that used them once is gone forever in the tomb. Shame, shame, shame.
Sorrow. Sorrow, but no shame. Be honest. Draw nigh. Let me answer. Let me say what I believe. Listen while I tell my story. Your story. Long, long ago, the dreamers came into this land. Men of all creeds and nations. Rich men, poor men, beggar men and thieves, wanderers, tipsters, the weak of will, the hard of fist, the soft men, the iron men, the servant and the slave, all seeking for a better life, a better day, a wider scope for their endeavor and their dream. From Spain, from Italy, from Holland, from England, and from France they came, these pioneers.
This was our vision. This our living dream. A newer world. A mighty world unfolding. For this we came. For this we ventured all. Liberty from tyranny, freedom from oppression, and equal rights of equal men.
And what did they find here? A vast wilderness stretching tree above tree, hill above hill, river beyond river, plain across plain, ever westward towards the setting sun. And this was their challenge. This was their destiny. Man in the wilderness, man against the wilderness. There it stood, and there he stood, sizing each other up, measuring their manhood, feeling their muscles, bragging and daring and boasting of victory. And the struggle was on. You must tame me or perish, sang the wilderness. Tame me or die. We will tame you and we will not die. The answer floated back.
Oh, it's away to the Allegheny land. If a man can do his part, then he ain't a man to stand. Away, away.
And ever the slow migration crept upward from the sea, ever upward toward the hills. And behind them the fields appeared, the hamlets grew. Dancing and laughing and singing were heard at the birthing, at the reaping, in the halls of council, and by the fireside. And ever ahead they built their homes where the trail called on.
This is our new home.
Home.
And you're not afraid?
Of what?
Of the darkness, the great woods around?
No.
Of the freezing stars, the cold, the bitter toil ahead, the loneliness?
I'm not afraid. With you.
These were not afraid. They believed in themselves, in their love, and in their future.
This is the firstborn.
Through pain and sickness, through hunger and death, they believed. And the race grew strong as the wilderness was strong, grew free as the wilderness was wide. And out of this boundless struggle with the forces of nature, a strong self-reliance was developed in these pioneers.
Oh.
But this was not enough. Creation was at work. And the towns appeared, cities grew, shipping and trading and a world of traffic poured back and forth. And the need for government came to be. A new government must be born, a pioneer government of their own urge and their devising, as became their mind and soul, their muscle and their stride. This must occur. This must be brought to pass. And everywhere men met and talked, conferred and planned, seeking to set forth in living words the thing they felt, the truth they glimpsed. One of these was that great teacher there in Williamsburg, Virginia, George Wyatt. To young Jefferson and his other law student, he used to say,
"Young gentlemen, this country of ours will write a mighty chapter in human history. That I believe. Some of you will be leaders in that endeavor. But remember this. If it is to last, its government must be built on the principles of liberty. Liberty of conscience, of action for the common good. A just government of just and rightful laws, administered by good and far-seeing men. In that spirit, I have tried to labor, and you must labor. For this is true now as it was when the pilgrims first landed on these shores, as it will be true in other times and other years, when other lips repeat these words. There is no substitute for individual character. It is the source of all sound government."
And from Carolina to Massachusetts, others were following Wyatt's way of thought. The Pinckneys, Randolphs, the Lees, young Patrick Henry, James Otis. And by his fireside in Virginia, Thomas Jefferson, grown older, wiser, and still remembering his teacher, sits thinking and writing. Writing and thinking. Let us hear him.
"A man's behavior is like his religion. It flows from his own heart. It is a self-evident principle and must be shown so. For men are individuals before everything else. This democracy, this self-government we are searching for, is a philosophy fitted to men full-grown. Men who acknowledge themselves as morally responsible beings as well as free. Men who accept the rights that go with responsibility, accepting freedom in terms of responsibility and responsibility in terms of freedom. Here begins the true Bill of Rights to be written down."
And so it was written down. And when on that long-ago day of June 12th, 1776, the Virginia House of Burgesses adopted a first Bill of Rights, as finally drawn up by Jefferson and the leading thinkers of that colony, something new had begun among men. But the victory was not won. It must yet be struggled for. The old world opposition was still strong. And many a Tory and more than one dictating governor who had never known the meaning of the wilderness brought all the authority and power of the king to bear against it. Such was Tryon in the South, Hutchinson of Massachusetts, who warned Paul Revere and his fellow townsmen,
"And I tell you, mechanics, you farmers, beggars, night riders, and all iniquitous persons whatsoever, that I shall continue to exercise the strong arm of power, and shall crush treason and rebellion wherever it shows its head, even if the gutters of the streets of Boston run filled with blood. Master Paul Revere, you speak of government by the people. I know the people. They're like children, full of moods and wishes and vain imaginings. They must be controlled by authority, by power, by stern measures. Once the government falls into their hands, all security, all culture, all grace and noble living are degraded. The greatness of a nation, of an empire, depends upon its aristocracy, its men of wealth and power. In the keeping of the rabble, all values die. The rights of the individual belong to the state. I order you to disperse at once."
will not. We stand on our rights as free men.
And the call for action ran from town to town. Again and again, the people met and laid their proposals before their different governors. And everywhere, they were faced by the power of the king's authority. In North Carolina,
we protest the search and seizure of private property.
In Virginia,
the arrest and confinement of our citizens on suspicion.
In all the colonies,
the Stamp Act,
the Boston Massacre.
And from colony to colony, the messages spread of a people uniting themselves in the cause of freedom. And in London, wise Ben Franklin once more had audience with the king, pleading,
Your Majesty, liberty is fast becoming a religion. Every act of antagonism increases it. And in defense of their religion, men will fight. I plead with you to seek a reconciliation before it is too late.
Dr. Franklin, your king commands. He does not beg.
Sir, you are not my king now.
So the opposing views faced each other. Views as strong and deep as life itself. And it seemed the hour had come, as many feared, and too many knew, when the battlefield must decide the issue. And in the head-on collision of any two doctrines of government, two philosophies of life, as always happens, the price must be paid with tragedy and pain. Can it be hindered? Can it be otherwise? There were many men ready to die then as there are now. Let them see the vision clear. Let them know the cause. And Jefferson and Madison, Patrick Henry, George Washington, Sam Adams gradually gave them that vision. And the singers sang it across the land. Morning, noon, and night they sang. And ever the refrain was heard, A nation of liberty and free men and justice unto all.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed with certain inalienable rights, such as life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed.
They marched. North and south they marched. At Lexington.
If they mean to have a war, let it begin here. Fire, I tell you, fire!
And Jefferson speaks again. The 4th of July, 1776. For all the people.
We do therefore solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of a right ought to be, free and independent states.
With independence declared, the young soldier said,
And in this new day and in this new country, the differences should be wiped away. There won't be any high and low now, some sitting up near the throne of God and some the dregs of the earth with blinding power over them. We are all free and equal before the law. And there's a chance for me to prove myself. For every man to prove himself.
And you will do it, John. You will, young soldier.
For you, I will.
As Jefferson said again, still again,
Nature has sown her talents as liberally among the poor as among the rich. The state must offer equal opportunity for all to grow and develop.
But the doubter persisted then, as he does now. Governor Hutchinson said,
You'll see the meaning of this liberty, this license, how the states will quarrel among themselves. Civil war will be bred, and the land overrun. How the rich will oppress the poor, because they'll have the power to do it. How greed and avarice will flourish. Waste and confusion in the voice of the people will be bought and sold like cattle in the marketplace. and this nation of liberty and free men you talk of will become a land of demagogues and office seekers and bloated slave drivers. And what might have been a great and glorious empire of English men and women spreading over the earth is broken and destroyed by these madmen.
But a struggler, the believer, kept his faith then as now.
He's wrong. Our country won't be what he says. We'll build it different. Out of these wounds and blood and tears, we'll build it into something great and wonderful. Oh, mistakes will occur the way he said. Evil things will happen as we go on. But the glory of it is that we ourselves had the power and the duty to change these mistakes, to wipe out these evils, to make our country what we want it.
And so, with the Declaration of Independence written down and made fast, and the Constitution of the United States created, witnessed, and signed, and the Bill of Rights set forth and sealed, 150 years ago, as a guarantee of the sacred and inviolable rights of every individual, high and low, within the borders of this land, there began a system of government never known in the world before. A system of government dreamed and talked about for centuries by mankind, preached about by Confucius, Plato, Jesus, John Locke, and countless others, but never put into practice until then. And as the decades have come and gone since that December day in 1791, we have tried to keep the vision of our forefathers clear and bright before us, following towards the future where it led. There have been abuses, as the doubters and critics prophesied. The states did quarrel among themselves. A civil war was fought, but still the vision held. The Union stood.
But greed and avarice still flourish among us.
And selfish men in high places.
Yes, that too. Our vision still exceeds our accomplishment, our reach, our grasp. But thank God we've had the vision, we've had the reach. And day by day, we are making progress towards answering the challenge of those living words.
But the waste and confusion in democracy.
Yes.
And the slowness of it.
There's plenty of that, but we are learning to remedy it.
And the hunger and poverty.
Yes, they are among us. These injustices still exist. But wherever there is persecution, wherever there is needless pain, wherever there is darkness of counsel and treachery, they exist contrary to our philosophy and not because of it. In certain other tragic lands today, they have become a part of that dictator philosophy and happen because of it. There the issue is drawn. There the program is made clear unto us all.
So we must fight again?
We must.
Because we think we are better than other nations?
No, we have been luckier. Let the people speak their answer. What does the teacher say?
The freedom to teach without fear or favor, to inquire into the facts, to seek the truth, is guaranteed to us by the Bill of Rights. Without this freedom, there can be no real education, no real training for sound citizenship and individual development. We will never yield this right. We will not shirk this responsibility.
And the press, what does the editor say?
Responsibility. A good word. We need to use that more, along with individual rights we hear so much about. One cannot exist without the other. A free press knows that. In that, it functions. In that resides its leadership. Its right, its duty, is to repeat the news as the news. Its right is editorially to criticize, to commend as commendation is needed, to condemn as condemnation is required for the common good. Its loyalty is not party, institution, or circumstance, but of an enlightened citizenship. The Bill of Rights declares it. We are dedicated to fight, to work for these rights.
And labor.
The rights of labor to organize, to bargain, to share in the profits of its sweat and toil is fundamental. Democracy guarantees that. This right must not be abused by others, nor by labor itself. In this right and this responsibility, we stand united.
And management.
Management and labor are one in this. Neither can live without the other. And the first requirement, as well as the final one, is the welfare and the good of all concerned, every man, woman, and child included, deserving of food, shelter, clothing, and the common decencies of life. The production, processing, and distribution of life-giving commodities demand the cooperation of us all with our rights and liberties. Differences must be settled by discussion, contracts arrived at through amity and understanding. And wherever we will this to happen, it will be so. Democracy provides the way.
We have a Bill of Rights, and it is written down. Tomorrow we shall have had it for 150 years. Today we stop and tell ourselves that it not only guarantees us freedoms, it also lays on us the obligations of free men. It is a charter of our liberties, but it is also a program of responsibilities. Everywhere among our people is the certainty, the abiding belief, that our kind of government stimulates the free growth of the human spirit. We have what all men want, whatever race they come from. Men are asking to be free, and we will answer them in terms of life, even if it lead through the ways of death. For in us is the strength to answer, the strength of the wilderness. In us is the vision to see it through, the vision of free men. For that, we will fight. For that, we will die. For that, we have awakened and shall live.
Celebration of the Bill of Rights sesquicentennial, the Columbia Workshop has just presented Citizen for Tomorrow by the Pulitzer Prize dramatist Paul Green. Earl McGill directed and Alexander Semler conducted the original music scored by Amadeo Di Filippi. Tomorrow night between 10 and 11 o'clock Eastern Standard Time over most of these stations, there will be a one-hour broadcast celebrating the 150th anniversary of the ratification of the Bill of Rights. The President of the United States will speak, and Norman Corwin will direct his own drama, We Hold These Truths, featuring many of Hollywood's foremost actors. Next Sunday, Charles Vanda, Western Program Director of CBS, will make his first appearance in New York as Director of the Workshop. Mr. Vanda's original Christmas play is called Miracle in Manhattan. It stars Ed Gardner, famous as Archie of Duffy's Tavern. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.